Hey, it is Ryan Seacrest here. If you love great games and a little extra excitement to your day, I got something fun for you. Chumba Casino and I have teamed up to create an exclusive online social casino game. It's called Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's fun and free to play, just like all your favorites from Chumba Casino. And every spin brings 10,000 ways to keep the good times going. Check it out and play for free today at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome to hour number two of a Tuesday live right here on the early line on Sports Grid. He is Donnie Wrightside. I am Ben Stevens. Thank you for joining us all across the Sports Grid Network. A ton to get to here in hour number two and over our next 2 hours up until 11 a.m. Eastern time. So many hardwood handicaps coming your way with a huge night of college basketball, the Jimmy V Classic, not far away from us in Midtown Manhattan at the world's most famous arena inside Madison Square Garden, night number two of the quarterfinals in the NBA in-season tournament, and a lot of football conversations to have here in this second hour, including bowl games, Donnie's favorite subject in college football. DRS, you fired up?
I am fired up here. Let's talk some bowls. Let's talk how important they are, and let's see what the players involved, because there's a lot of really good football players we're not going to see in bowl season. Why? Why?
Just how significant are bowl games? Well, if you want to back Donnie Wrightside's argument, you would point at Caleb Williams not playing in the Holiday Bowl and what is going to be his final game at USC. But we all knew that against UCLA, that was Caleb's final game in college football at Southern Cal. So pretend to be shocked at the breaking news that we learned yesterday that Caleb Williams is not playing in the Holiday Bowl for the Trojans, not even a New Year's Six Bowl against Louisville. Again, shocking breaking news. I am so surprised I can hardly go on. We knew Caleb Williams would only be preparing for the 2024 NFL draft. Let's welcome in our Sports Grid Radio audience here to hour number two of the early line live on this Tuesday. Sirius XM channel 159. All of our radio terrestrial affiliates now in the fold. He is Donnie. I am Ben. So Donnie, weren't you shocked at all at the idea that Caleb Williams is not playing in the Holiday Bowl for USC?
No, and here's the shame of it all, Ben. Let's go to Division III football. 32 teams make it in. USC might be that 30th team here. Caleb Williams plays because why? The playoffs mean something here, and we would all enjoy it. The fact of the matter is Caleb and his representation are 1,000% correct. Why would you play in a meaningless bowl game when you can get ready for your pro football debut as the number one overall pick? Can you imagine that? USC trying to say, you know what? One last stand here for the Trojans to try to upset Alabama or whoever might be ahead of them in the college football playoff, but you go to the Holiday Bowl and they go, man, do we even have to play in this?
Yeah, no. The answer is no. It never would be expected to see Caleb Williams in a bowl game that wasn't the college football playoff. Let's look back on Caleb Williams' college career. First starting at Oklahoma, he gave the world a thrill, filling in for OU and Spencer Rattler under Lincoln Riley in the 2021 college football season in the Red River rivalry against Texas. Then he followed Lincoln Riley to Southern California to be the quarterback for USC, where last year in 2022, of course, won a Heisman Trophy. This year was a Heisman favorite for the opening month and a half of 2023. I think ultimately, Donnie, we will look back on Caleb Williams' time in college football as one of unfulfilled promise, not because of Caleb or anything he did individually at the quarterback position, but because of his head coach. In his head coach's reliance and loyalty for somehow, some way, on his former defensive coordinator Alex Grinch, who of course was fired midway through this season by USC. A dismal defense in 2 years at USC, despite Caleb Williams and a sensational offense on the other side that kept Caleb Williams from a college football playoff or ever winning a conference championship. They did play in the Pac-12 title game a season ago, but they got ran out the gym quite literally by the Utah Utes. And of course, this year, a 7-5 college football season. So the stats for Caleb Williams will rack up there with some of the best we have seen in the last decade, decade and a half, 20 years in college football, but he never got to the end goal of contending for a national championship, not because of what he did or his inability at that talent level, but the struggles that USC had on the defensive side of the football.
Yeah, by the way, it's kind of funny you bring that up, 7-5. I didn't realize how that record was so bad. And you say, well, how's this possible with Lincoln Riley at a USC team where you have all that talent surrounding you, including the best player overall? Now, not the Heisman Trophy winner a second time, but the best player in college football, which will be the number one overall pick, and you have that bad? Like, how bad is your defense here? And why would USC even have that bad of a defense to even begin with? Like, you just have five stars all over the place. You just put them in the right spots. They should be able to perform, but also shows you the depth of the Pac-12, where the best college football player in the country can barely get his team into a serviceable bowl game at that point. And by the way, next year's Pac-12, there won't be next year's Pac-12 to make a run back at it. What a shame, Pac-12, in your finest hour, just blowing it all up.
USC, by the way, an early 7.5-point underdog against Louisville for that Holiday Bowl at the end of this month in San Diego. Caleb Williams, though, as he forecasts and gets ready for the 2024 NFL draft, is still a hefty odds on favorite. Minus 300 for Caleb to go first overall. Drake May, North Carolina's quarterback, plus 250. There has been a lot of steam on who presumably is going to win the Heisman Trophy in 2023, that being LSU's Jaden Daniels, to maybe be in the conversation for that number one overall pick. One of my favorite things is the NFL draft odds, because it's smoke and mirror season. It is lying season. These odds are going to change. There is very likely a point during February or early March where Caleb Williams is going to not be minus money, but plus money. Who is going to overtake him? I don't know. I ultimately believe Caleb Williams is going to be the first overall selection. To what team? That's still an interesting question down the 5-week home stretch of this NFL regular season. But I will believe it's Caleb Williams. The odds might look different, though, than minus 300 where they stand right now.
All right, let's go in the future in time here, Ben, right? I don't know the exact date it's going to be, but Jaden Daniels is going to have a pro day for LSU. He's going to throw the football. We're going to say, yeah, that's really good. He's going to line up for a 40, which had no significant impact on his draft position. He is going to blaze that 40 and overtake Caleb Williams as a favorite for a short time until the number one team with that draft pick comes to their senses. It goes, the real deal overall package is probably Caleb Williams, but you are so dead on there. You see it right now. We've talked about Caleb Williams for 2 years, tanking for Caleb, everybody's going to fall out and he's the number one pick, which he still should be at this point, even a subpar season for USC. But the fact of the matter is, measurables drive analysts crazy. And when he blazes a 4.440 in the 40-yard dash, Jaden Daniels, he's going to overtake Caleb Williams, only to not be the number one overall pick when it's all said and done.
There's been some conversation about Caleb Williams and his character and how much he cares about football or having ownership stake in the National Football League. All of that is malarkey and a fallacy. Don't buy into it. At this moment, though, the NFL component outside of the prospects is interesting. Chicago owns that number one overall pick, courtesy of Carolina. What will the Bears do? Trade away Justin Fields, draft Caleb Williams, or go somewhere else? More in the NFL next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Week 13 of the NFL regular season now in the books. Week 14 on the horizon, just 5 weeks left in this 18-week regular season around the NFL. Quarterback news and notes around the National Football League and some pretty significant quarterback news. We saw Kenny Pickett after multiple weather delays in Pittsburgh on Sunday, but before the first weather delay, I believe it was, suffer an ankle injury to an ankle that had already had some issues throughout the year. Because of that ankle injury, Kenny Pickett had tightrope ankle surgery yesterday. He is going to miss this upcoming Thursday night. Short week for Pittsburgh at home as they get ready to take on the New England Patriots. But head coach Mike Tomlin saying yesterday, Donnie, that Kenny Pickett is not out for the remainder of this year. In other words, it is not a season-ending ankle injury for Pittsburgh's quarterback.
And by the way, they still sit in the fifth seed here at 7-5. And you say, like, well, there's no way they can make the playoffs. I mean, you talk from 7-5 in the fifth seed right now, Ben. You slide that down to 5-7. That's a 13 seed. Look at all of those teams still in the hunt here. And if you're the Pittsburgh Steelers trying to hang on, you lose your quarterback. Yeah. That's never a good thing. But also, it's not just about losing your quarterback. Mitchell Trubisky has been around the block. It's not as if you're going to an undrafted rookie free agent, like, oh, no, this is going to look terrible. He has shown some signs of life, and even at one point in his NFL career, was an NFL favorite to become the MVP with the Chicago Bears. It seems like so long ago, but it really wasn't. And I'm not saying Mitchell Trubisky can be that MVP level, or at least somebody thinks he's an MVP level. He just has to be serviceable. Yeah. But the question is, can he even be serviceable? And can the quarterback be serviceable in that Pittsburgh offensive structure? And then you look to see who they're going to play down the stretch. Oh, it's the Baltimore Ravens. It's the Colts. It's the Bengals and the Seahawks all fighting for their playoff lives. And then you have the New England Patriots this Thursday who are going to run the football 75 times and slow it down and maybe another 6-0 game. As much as I want the Pittsburgh Steelers to make the playoffs, I have a ticket on the Pittsburgh Steelers to win the Super Bowl. They're not going to win that, but I figured if they made the playoffs, I could make money off of that ticket. They're so embarrassing right now. And also, you take a look at missed opportunities, Ben. You're sitting there at 7-4 with the Arizona Cardinals at home. You should have blown the doors off them. Injury or no injury, you're at 8-4 going like, hey, 500 down the stretch. We're in the playoffs here, and that's all we can hope for, and get Kenny Pickett back. Now it feels to me, even though they're on the inside, you know, of these playoff structure, I feel like they're on the inside looking outside at this point right now. Yeah. Ridiculous.
Injury to Pickett or no injury, multiple lengthy weather delays or none of them. It was a weird game in Pittsburgh on Sunday, but you still have to find a way to beat the Arizona Cardinals, who picked up their third win of the season against you on Sunday. If you look at the box score for Mitchell Trubisky, it wasn't terrible. 11 of 17, 117 yards, a touchdown, but that came way late in regulation in garbage time when they were down 21 points, 24-3. I think, Donnie, at a critical juncture in the game, Arizona had just punted the ball back to Pittsburgh. Steelers down by a touchdown. Mitchell Trubisky drops a snap. It was low, sure, drops it, but then kind of like looked at the football on the ground, and it was recovered by Arizona. It sets the Cardinals up with a short field. They score a touchdown a few plays later to take that 14-point lead and never looked back. Now, here's the benefit for Trubisky and the Steelers, and I think it says more not about Pittsburgh, but about New England. The Steelers are booked as a 6-point home favorite on a short week against the New England Patriots. The total is now 30.5. We think Bailey Zappe is going to get the start for New England on Thursday. The Patriots are abysmal. I don't care if it's Zappe, if it's Mac Jones, if it's Malik Cunningham, if it's Bill O'Brien putting on a jersey and walking out there to play quarterback. The Patriots were shut out last week for the second time this year. The Patriots have lost 10 games. They haven't scored more than 17 points in their last 9 losses. In their last 3 games combined, Donnie, combined, they've scored 13 total points. Give me Pittsburgh, play the 6, take the under, maybe just New England's team total if you would like. That Pittsburgh defense will do enough to win the Steelers a football game on Thursday and improve that record to 8-5.
Yeah, they don't even have to do all that much, too, because this is the Ezekiel Elliott revenge game, I guess, because Ramondre Stevenson got a high ankle sprain this past weekend. And Zeke has looked decent this year, but he's the only offense. When your only offensive weapon is Ezekiel Elliott this year, who's ran for about, what, 400 yards total in the season, you know it's going to be bad. And Bill Belichick, sometimes it just bottoms out on you. There's no way Bill Belichick behind the scenes told Robert Kraft, we're going to tank the way out. You get me a really good quarterback and we'll turn this thing around like it was Tom Brady back in the year 1999 or 2000. That's not going to happen at this point here. They are embarrassing here, and they will continue to be embarrassing. But also, look at this. Again, getting back to this, Ben, you had the Arizona Cardinals at home. You're not going to get the Patriots at home on a Thursday night game. Like, you should be walking in and with the, hey, well, we're going to finish with 11 wins, which would be outrageous. But with that schedule, they should have a leg up on winning 11 games. We'll see what the Steelers have. But if the Steelers game plan, and I can't fault them for this one time, just take a look at what the Chargers did. Laugh at the offense of New England and say, as long as we don't turn the football over, this is an easy victory. Who cares if we win 3-0, 3-2, or 6-3? That's how you have to do it. So I'm not going to yell if I'm a Pittsburgh Steelers fan in the stadium and boo because they have a 6-0 lead at the half. And quite frankly, they're running the football and just playing field position. That's all you want to do to pick up a victory. And you have a mobile quarterback in Mitchell Trubisky who can do that here. But my goodness, this is a primetime game we're going to watch in the NFL, maybe the worst of the season.
Right now, Donnie, New England is the only team sub 500 that Pittsburgh is going to play the remainder of this season. But the Colts are on the schedule 7-5, a team that is in the wild card race. The Pittsburgh might have to upend to claim one of those playoff spots. The Bengals at 6-6, the Seahawks at 6-6, and then end out the regular season against the Ravens week number 18. Who knows what Baltimore will need in that finale of the regular season. It is not the most difficult schedule. Well, despite the fact the Pats are the final team Pittsburgh plays this year, sub 500. You know another team in the AFC East well below 500? The New York Jets. 4-8. One of the saddest sentences that can ever be said about an NFL football game. Tim Boyle was benched for Trevor Siemian. That is what the Jets said on Sunday, and they lost 13-8. At home as a 1.5-point underdog against the Atlanta Falcons. So yesterday, there were multiple reports that the Jets wanted to return to Zach Wilson because he gives them their best shot, better than Tim Boyle, better than Trevor Siemian. Yeah, duh. But still, Zach Wilson is not all that illustrious. The experiment for him as the face of the franchise in New York has come to a close. But good for Zach Wilson, Donnie, standing up reportedly and saying, not too sure about that, guys. I've seen the quarterbacks get pressure the last couple of weeks. I'm focusing on my NFL future, not here for this Jets organization. Head coach Robert Saleh did dispute those reports that Zach Wilson was iffy about playing quarterback again for the Jets. But Donnie, I don't really know if it matters. I'm kind of team Zach Wilson. You guys wanted me, then you threw me in the gutter, and now you want me to come out of the ashes once again? I'm good.
Yes, and again, there's nobody really scared because as an NFL player, you have to have a thick skin here. You know you're going to get benched if you don't play well. But also, when you're looking at Zach Wilson overall, you say to yourself, all right, you know what? It's one thing to be demoted to the backup quarterback. It's another thing, Ben, to be the third stringer because that's embarrassing, which means you run scout team. I don't even know if you get in the meetings with the top two quarterbacks that week here. And then when they laugh and you know who the good quarterbacks are, you know situations where you should be playing over somebody, go, hey, look, we're embarrassing ourselves out here. Can you come back and maybe give us a competent points and say, like, what game plan are you putting in for me now when I come back and we get crushed by the Miami Dolphins or the Texans? And you go like, we knew he couldn't play. Back to Trevor Siemian at this point. It's kind of odd that he is saying, I don't want to get back in there. But I think everybody now who hated on Zach is like, you know what, Zach? Tell him. You don't want to play in this whack system anymore.
Yep. The Philadelphia Eagles, by the way, need some help defensively. They signed Shaq Leonard, who was cut just a few weeks ago by Indianapolis. He was an AP All-Pro first teamer in three of his first 4 years and Defensive Rookie of the Year. It wasn't great last year, but maybe there's hope once again in Philly. More on TEL next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Live right here on the early line on this Tuesday on Sports Grid. I am Ben Stevens. He is Donnie Wrightside. It's been just about 48 hours since Selection Sunday in college football. In the aftermath of the final four teams that are playing in the 10th and final year of the four-team format of the college football playoff is not completely over. We still have those discussions and debates if the committee got it right. I do not believe they did. Donnie Wrightside does. But the four teams, nonetheless, number one, Michigan, number two, Washington, number three, Texas, and number four, Alabama, with number five, Florida State, and number six, Georgia, left on the outside looking in. But Donnie, I think as we said yesterday, two things can live in harmony. We don't often like dichotomy of thought where you have two things pulling against each other. But even for me, who hated the selection process and thought Florida State was left out for one of the worst reasons you will ever see and hates everything the committee has said about any of the reasons they have tried to justify leaving the Noles on the outside of the college football playoff, I'm still incredibly excited for the CFP semifinal matchups that we have on New Year's Day, January 1st, 2024. To start a new year with significant college football games, that's the way it is meant to be. And Donnie, when the granddaddy of them all is on January 1st to start a new year, when the Rose Bowl kicks off a new year, that's a beautiful thing. And that's where the college football playoff semifinal does start. On January 1st, 5 p.m. Eastern time, it's number one, Michigan, and it's number four, Alabama. At this moment, Michigan is opened as a slight 1.5-point favorite, minus 118, now minus 120 on the money line. The total, under 50 total points at 46.5 for that over-under. Donnie, we said it previewing the SEC championship game last Saturday. Alabama now has only been an underdog four times in the previous decade. All four opponents have been the same program. It's the Georgia Bulldogs. This is the first time that Crimson Tide have been booked as an underdog against anybody in the last 10 years of college football not named Georgia. And I think that's where we begin.
Yes, we do begin there. Two quick points, though, before we get to Alabama, Michigan overall for me. Number one, you take a look at the college football schedule, which, again, I love the Final Four here. But the fact of the matter is you have a game at 5 o'clock, which is fantastic. What is Texas-Washington doing on at 8:45 p.m.? What world do we live in at this point here? Why is that game not at 2 o'clock and then you have a 5 o'clock game? It's a national holiday. There's a reason why the NFL doesn't line up on Sunday afternoon, Ben, and play every single game at 8:20 at night. You have the entire day to dominate the field. And don't give me another bowl game is at 2 o'clock, because nobody cares about any other bowl games than the college football playoff here. So that's gripe number one. But also, gripe number two here, which isn't really a gripe, if you would have told us, Ben, and you specifically, hey, you know what? Georgia, Florida State in a big time bowl game, you'd be excited. Now, why aren't you excited for that? We should be loving this. We are getting exactly what we want. Alabama, Michigan, Texas, Washington, and Georgia, Florida State still going to play. So I don't see why everybody's all upset, including Florida State. You can say, yeah, look at that. We won the Orange Bowl. That's big time, baby. Knock off an SEC opponent. Now, back to Alabama, Michigan here. You give Nick Saban 3 weeks to get prepared for a football game. I don't care who they are playing. Advantage Alabama in that spot. Now, having said that, 45.5 does stick out, because what's always our first inclination? Hold on now. 45.5 points, you got to go over. I get that here. But Michigan is not entering into this football game, Ben, to say, let's go toe-to-toe with Alabama's offense and let it rip here, and let's go toe-to-toe Milrow versus my quarterback McCarthy. I want to put it here. I don't know if the numbers are out yet. I saw the anytime touchdown scoring market, minus 220 here for Quorum, which is hilarious. But again, he's probably going to score because that's what he does. What is the passing prop here for JJ, quarterback? And I don't mean yardage-wise, because I'm going to say right now, Michigan's goal of having to throw 25 times or less in this game, I don't know if that's how it's going to be a pathway to victory, but that's a perfect scenario. You tell me right now, JJ McCarthy's at 16 of 21, Michigan won that football game.
Yeah, Alabama allows less than 185 yards through the air. But where the Crimson Tide has been susceptible at certain points this year, ergo the Auburn game and the Iron Bowl in the regular season finale, has been on the ground. Alabama allows 124 rushing yards per game. That is right where Michigan wants to be, feeding Blake Corum, feeding Donovan Edwards. Because J.J. McCarthy, we wanted to talk all about the passing yards of Tate Rodemaker against Florida and Brock Glenn in the ACC title game against Louisville. J.J. McCarthy hasn't thrown for more than 150 yards in four consecutive weeks, and he's only thrown one touchdown pass to one interception, maybe two touchdown passes now following the Big Ten title game against Iowa. I will also say another key matchup advantage for Michigan, they pressure the quarterback pretty well. Top 50 in the country, 33 sacks, 2.54 per game. Georgia was not as great or elite up front, Donnie, this year as they had been the past two. They still got the Jalen Milroe four times on Saturday afternoon in Atlanta. Alabama has struggled against elite front sevens throughout this college football season, keeping Jalen Milroe upright. I think that's another matchup advantage for Michigan. But the Wolverines this year, 0-3 against the number in non-conference play. Some might say that's because a certain sign-stealing operation scouted Big Ten opponents and potential college football playoff opponents, but not the likes of UNLV or Bowling Green. Some would also point to the fact, Donnie, that Michigan has been atrocious in the college football playoff. They lost to Georgia 2 years ago in the semifinal, 34-11. If it wasn't for a late garbage time touchdown and a two-point conversion, that would have been a three-touchdown differential or a 31-point even differential. And last year, as a 7.5-point favorite against TCU, Michigan lost outright, 51-45. When many people thought, all right, TCU, you kind of deserved it, but you're not going to be able to make any noise. A TCU team that lost 65-7 in the national championship game. And Jim Harbaugh, as a head coach during his college tenure, dating back to his days at Stanford, 2-7 in bowl games, 0-2 now in the college football playoff, and in Ann Arbor, just 1-6 in bowl games. That will be a narrative to follow as Jim Harbaugh lines up on the other side against Nick Saban.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun one to watch, too, because I love the fact it used to be like, you know, you ended your season November 17th. You didn't play till January 3rd. But I think now that these teams are playing extended seasons here, more games and in their conference championship, you almost get a couple bye weeks here, which does make some sense because Jace McClellan here of the Alabama Crimson Tide, if he's coming back eligible for this game after being banged up, that helps. Both of these teams don't have significant injuries that they're fighting back. Like we talk about Florida State and Jordan Travis. Oh, he's not going to come back at all for the college football playoff or the college football bowls. These teams will be healthy coming in, but it's the same thing like Bill Belichick used to be, right? Don't give him extra time to prepare. He's going to have an elite defensive scheme. I do believe Nick Saban with extra time to prepare does have an advantage in this one, but I do think as we set up, it's interesting to me. I think Alabama probably is going to end up, once it's all said and done, being the favorite in this football game, but Michigan actually matches up very well with Alabama, as you talked about. Mm-hmm. It's not as if you don't want to say, okay, we're shotgun five wide and get after against Alabama. You can get yourself into some trouble. But if you limit the damage and play good defense, what Michigan does, and take the game as it is, as I pointed out earlier, we're not looking for J.J. McCarthy to be the Heisman Trophy winner in this game. All he has to do is throw for 175 yards, one touchdown, no interceptions, a high completion rating there, as we said, and just don't turn the football over. That ground game certainly will turn an attack against Alabama. It's a fun matchup overall, and that 45.5, boy, that's a number I just want to bet the over. But the more you think about it and talk it through, it's like, wait a second, the game plan for Michigan is not to win 35-31 this game. The game plan for Michigan is to win 24-17.
See, I love the over in this football game because, yes, Michigan is the best scoring defense in the country, only allowing 9.5 points per game. That follows the Iowa shutout in the Big Ten championship game. But the two previous, maybe against the two most explosive offenses Michigan saw all year, Ohio State in the game, they allowed 24 points. And against Maryland and Talia Tungavailoa, who set a Big Ten record, by the way, for most career passing yards this season for the Terps and throughout his college career in College Park, Maryland scored 24 points. I think Alabama can at least get to 24, if not more. I expect Alabama to be the most explosive offensive attack Michigan has played all year. Again, the best scoring defense in college football, only allowing 9.5 points per game. I think they will be able to, though, to score against Alabama as well, who has allowed 20 or more in 7 consecutive games against a Power 5 opponent. I think Alabama is going to have success. I've already bet the Crimson Tide at -102 on the money line, where the line opened up on Sunday afternoon, Donnie, because, like you, I agree the Tide is going to close as the favorite. Now, we'll get to Washington and Texas on the other side. But let's take a look at the national championship odds and where they stand. It should be pointed out that Michigan is the national title favorite, +175. But who has the second best price? That would be Alabama, Donnie, at +210.
Yeah, and rightfully so. It's, again, I think those numbers will change here and fluctuate because we do have the slight underdog here, Alabama. Same thing you're seeing in the overall odds market. Once Alabama flips over to a favorite, which I do think they will by the time we get to game time, Alabama obviously will be the favorite to win the national championship because they will be favorite to beat Michigan here. A lot of stuff is going to change, but the one thing we can always agree on, and I've said this from NFL to college football, every big game, every championship game should always be in the Rose Bowl. I've never been to the Rose Bowl, and even when we're out in Los Angeles for the Super Bowl, never got to take a look at it. But all the way from a kid, it just looks like the coolest environment to ever play a football game, and I'm glad that it's still in a big stage here. Even though I get angry at the politics behind the Rose Bowl, I'm glad to see Alabama-Michigan. It's going to be a lot of fun just in the pageantry of the game.
That sunset on New Year's Day for the college football playoff semifinal in the Rose Bowl under the San Gabriel Mountains will be one of beauty. More from the college football playoff and the New Year's Six next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We continue taking a look at the early lines here on the early line for the college football playoff and the rest of CFB bowl season. Do not listen to Donnie Wrightside. 42 bowl games prior to the national championship is not enough. If any of your friends tell you there are too many bowl games, it is time to get new friends. I can't get a new co-host here in the mornings unless anybody wants 7 to 9 a.m. Eastern time. So I'll just have to listen to Donnie Wrightside rail against the bowl system in college football throughout the rest of this month. But one thing that Donnie and I can't agree on is the college football playoff semifinal matchups are going to be extraordinary, where games and the results on a football field will determine the race for a national championship. Donnie, we brought this point up following our breakdown of the Rose Bowl between number one Michigan and number four Alabama. The Wolverines, the national championship favorite at this moment, +175, only about 35 cents in front of Alabama. The Crimson Tide, +210. That means the odds makers believe whoever wins the Rose Bowl in that first semifinal game will be the favorite, even if by a point and a half, to win the national championship against the winner of the Sugar Bowl, the nightcap in New Orleans on January 1st, 2024. Texas is the 3 seed, but the Longhorns are the favorite. 4.5 points is that spread. Donnie, the over-under, 63.5.
And by the way, I love the way the college football playoff sets up. You give us one game here where it looks like it's going to be rock'em sock'em robots at a 45.5 and could go either direction. And then you have an absolute aerial assault that's going to take place in perfect conditions in a dome on a fast track in New Orleans between Texas and Washington. First inclination here. I'm having a hard time trying to gauge Texas for me, Ben. What I mean by that is Texas could very easily get bounced out by Washington. That's about what I thought. But Texas could wind up winning a national championship and going like, wow, that's what we thought as well. That offense looks really good. So from Alabama, Michigan, got a pretty good read on them. Washington, watched them quite a few times there out in the Pac-12. I got a good read on them. Texas, I still don't have a read on them, even though they are a really good football team. I feel like they're the true wild card in this whole thing. But I do agree they should be the favorite over Washington. The one thing you like about Washington, you saw McMillan come back into the fold, who was supposed to be their number one guy to start the season, now showing up as a 1-2 punch Batman and Robin on the outside with a Dunze. That is absolutely incredible. But the Texas offense looks like it can just shatter you from so many different angles, so many different running backs, so many different wide receivers, and with Quinn Ewers pulling the strings here, the sky is the limit. Now also, 63.5, you really should be able to get over that total. But I would say even more if they stayed in rhythm and still played on a week-to-week basis, I would like it a little bit more. I do get a little bit nervous that there's about 3 weeks between this football game. Both defenses will have 3 weeks to prepare for these offenses. And I'm not even saying, Ben, they're going to slow them down and that's a guarantee. But I look at that 63.5 and say, it sounds about right, but I'm not going to be surprised if it is a little bit lower scoring on the back end of it. So early me, I think Texas wins the football game, and I'm leaning a little bit towards the under, and we'll see where it goes. And it could be one of those, Ben, where it goes, hey, it goes up to 65.5, boom, love it. Or, 60.5, now is their value on the over. That's where I'm at.
So I lean the over as well here because I think both defenses can be exposed by two lethal offensive attacks. Yeah. I'll talk about what my favorite bet is and is going to be once the number comes up in just a moment. But as Donnie well knows, a lover of all college football bowl games outside of the CFP in the New Year Six, one of the better bowl games late into December is the Alamo Bowl, where both of these teams faced off against one another last year. Texas versus Washington, UW won outright 27-20 as a slight underdog around a field goal number. In fact, that's been the Huskies' calling card against ranked opponents and as the underdog under Kalen DeBoer. He is perfect, undefeated against ranked opponents and as the underdog, including in the Pac-12 championship game. Washington has been booked as the dog four times under DeBoer since the start of 2022. They have won outright in all four games. I believe Washington has the underdog role because the odds overlook this Husky side. Texas is deserving of being the favorite. Texas is the fourth best rushing defense in all of college football, Donnie. They only allow 81 yards per game. And when you hold Ollie Gordon II to 34 rushing yards in the Big 12 title game, a guy that had 120 plus in seven of the final eight Big 12 games for Oklahoma State down the stretch to get the Pokes into the Big 12 title game, that is true testament to what Texas's front seven has improved for under Nick Kwiatkowski in the last couple of years, because they have been great up front. And I mean really, really good for this Texas Longhorns defense. That was always my skepticism of this Texas team entering last year. They were greatly improved defensively. And this year, under Kwiatkowski, they have been fantastic up front. Again, the only rushing defense in the Big 12 to allow less than 130 yards per game this year. They allow less than 81. Now, Washington is one of the 15 worst passing defenses in the country. They allow 263 yards per game through the air for a Quinn Ewers guy that just threw for 450 yards in the Big 12 championship game, a Big 12 title game record. That should be scary for UW. And Texas is very good on the ground as well. Jonathan Brooks, of course, out for the remainder of this season. C.J. Baxter has stepped in, and a plethora of running backs for a talented Texas offense. And Washington allows 134 yards per game on the ground. But Donnie, for me, the Huskies defense, who I thought was going to be more talented than they have shown this year, at least from the stat output, they've stepped up and done just enough when they have needed to. Now, to my favorite bet of the college football playoff, to my favorite bet of this game. The numbers are not out yet for the props, either rushing, receiving, or in this case, the passing yards, because we have a quarterback comparison entering the Sugar Bowl, as good as you will find. Despite Donnie throwing for less than 300 yards in four of the final six games the Huskies played to end out the Pac-12 season, Michael Penix Jr. still leads the nation this year in passing yards at 4,218. He threw for 300 plus in both of the matchups against Oregon. Now for a Texas defense that allows 241 passing yards per game. Donnie, this game is going to be close, right? I don't think it's going to be a blowout on either side. Five times this year, Texas won a conference game by not more than two touchdowns. Every quarterback in those five games, or in a loss, including that Red River rivalry against Oklahoma, the quarterback threw for at least 285 yards, and Dylan Gabriel in that Red River rivalry was the guy to throw for less than 300. Four of the other five throwing for 300 or more. I'm going to take the over on Michael Penix Jr. and his passing yards prop, knowing that despite Dylan Johnson and the success that he had down the home stretch against Oregon State, against Oregon in the Pac-12 championship game, in the ground game becoming a factor for this Washington offense, I think Texas is going to struggle to contain Michael Penix Jr. in that lethal aerial attack that adds back a healthy Jalen McMillan alongside Jalen Polk and, of course, led by Rome Odunze.
Yes, and I think your point is valid here on the blowout scenario, because I know some people might be looking and saying, okay, Texas probably the better overall team despite the records here. They should be able to move the football against Washington, and I do agree with that. But if Washington is down two touchdowns, you hit the nail on the head. Michael Penix might be the best spinner of the football in the country, and it looks pretty coming from that left-handed arm. And then you take a look at now having the top three wide receivers, where for most of the season it was Polk and Odunze. And I preface this by saying it again, McMillan was supposed to come in and be the top dog this year on that passing and on that reception side, only 468 yards, but you saw in the Pac-12 championship game how important he can be. So who are you stopping at the wide receiver position? And if you do pay attention, you have your safeties deep, and you're a nickel and dime the entire game, Dylan Johnson can run wild. So from a perspective of the perfect fit for an offense, it seems like it's probably Washington. And if you do get nervous in a game like, oh no, it's 14-0 early, sit down, settle in, because that offense is not going to give up the entire way. So I sound like I'm talking to myself more and more here in to the underdog in Washington and taking an over in that football game. Because the one thing we do know, both of these teams are going to be aggressive. And again, I can't stress this enough, two legitimate offenses here that are going to be playing on turf and used to playing on turf as Husky Stadium and then down there for the Texas Longhorns as well. So I do think this sets up as a pretty good game. I just don't want to see a little bit of rust entering into this one. But as I said also, it's not as long a layoff as it used to be even maybe a decade ago. So maybe these teams will come in fired up and ready to go right from jump.
Yeah, just over 3 weeks until we get to January 1st, 2024. Yep. Two teams that will not be playing in the college football playoff and have every single right to be incredibly pissed off about it. Florida State, number five. Certainly FSU as the only undefeated Power 5 conference champion, 15 of them in the 10-year history of the college football playoff, to be left outside the top four in the CFP. They will take on Georgia as a two-touchdown underdog in the Orange Bowl. Again, lost in the conversation about UGA, the two-time defending national champions, because of the ire that Florida State should feel about being left out, is Georgia. One loss in their last 30 football games. Two losses in their last 47 football games, dating back to the middle of the 2020 CFB campaign. But because they lost once to Alabama this year, twice in the last 47, both times against the Crimson Tide in an SEC championship game, they have no chance of playing in the CFP. Now, what are we going to get, Donnie, for your favorite bowl game of the year, the Orange Bowl? Will you get a pissed off and spurned Florida State team who is trying to prove with Tate Rodemaker, you should have let us in the big dance, be given that opportunity against a Georgia side that's like, hey, if it's not a national championship, what do we really care? Or are we going to get two teams that both want to win to both make a statement? I will say this, Georgia 0-4 against the spread in non-conference games this year, now laying two touchdowns against FSU.
Yeah, there's no way I'm going anywhere near the Georgia side at minus 14 because they're not going to be all that motivated to play in this. Florida State does have that we're angry you got left out, but you're not bringing a quarterback along to the party with you. So you take a look at this 45.5, not really the same way we look at Alabama and Michigan. I just look for Florida State to do much more of the same. Mike Norvell is a good coach, and he knows he can't have these quarterbacks throw passes, which means a lot of running backs leaning on a lot of running games and a lot of wildcat formations and not a lot of air attack. And also, who's playing for Georgia? Like, they'd have 16 guys leaving for the NFL where nobody cares and you're just trying to break in backup wide receivers and tight ends. Brock Bowers probably is not going to play in this football game here. So we're not going to get we're not going to get a real talented Georgia squad to line up. So I can't go anywhere near that 14. But then again, if I look at Florida State saying we're just going to run wildcat the entire game, might as well just take the under here.
I think the under is in play. Florida State has played four games this year to end out the home stretch, even with Jordan Travis, as the defense got better and better, where the total has been 50 points or less, all four games under. I think Tate Rodemaker will have something to say. I think Trey Benson has a big day. And I will say this, before we get the final determinations of who plays in this bowl game for Georgia, I would bet Florida State at plus 14 right now. I don't think the line is going to stay at two touchdowns. I think we dip under by the time we get to December 30th in the Orange Bowl as a part of the New Year's Six. I really like Florida State in this spot because of matchup advantages and because, although the quarterback is the most significant position on a football field, the Florida State defense deserved an opportunity to prove that it could win a national championship as it stepped up in the biggest way in the absence of Jordan Travis. Again, we'll talk about the college football playoff at a later date. Now we focus on the AFC in the NFL up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Rounding out this second hour of the Early Line Live right here on a Tuesday on Sports Grid, I am Ben, he is Donnie, and the Sports Grid app is always here as well. Now available for download at both the Apple and the Play Store. You can scan the QR code on your screen in a matter of moments, all of our insight and information in the palm of your hand. So, Donnie, as we end out this second hour, love hearing from the people, how they feel about what is happening in the wide world of sports and following NFL week number 13 that came to a close last night in Jacksonville. Who's the best team in the AFC? That was the question in Fade the Public. The four teams listed at Sports Grid TV on Twitter are the four teams at 8-4 or better currently in that conference in the National Football League. The Chiefs, 8-4. Also the favorites still to win the AFC Championship. Baltimore, 9-3. Second best price to win the AFC title. Miami, also 9-3, third best number to win the AFC Championship. In Jacksonville, despite the loss last night, still 8-4, fourth best price to win the AFC title. So of those four teams at Sports Grid TV on Twitter, who is the best team in the AFC? Most of the public, Donnie, nearly 54% of the public, saying the Baltimore Ravens.
It should be the Baltimore Ravens. If the season ended now, right now, for the AFC, it would be the Baltimore Ravens. So 53.8% makes some sense, and that's the way I voted. But do you know who has the toughest schedule in the NFL down the stretch? It's the Baltimore Ravens, not just in the AFC, not just in the AFC North. It's in the entire NFL. They're going to play San Francisco, Miami, Jacksonville, Pittsburgh, and Los Angeles on the way out. So do I think they can get the top seed? I hope so, but that schedule is telling me there are going to be some losses in the fold here for the Ravens trying to get that number one overall seed. But I did vote for the Ravens here.
We'll continue to have those conversations on the other side because the number one overall seed in the AFC is going to be a race down the home stretch and could factor in those postseason odds. We'll do that when hour three starts in 55 seconds.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. On the track, my car's look is everything. But today, I'm talking about more than just paint schemes. I'm talking about my favorite games at Chumba Casino. Check out exclusives like Stampede Fury and my own King Croc Fury. It's just as wild as my car looked in Texas. With over 200 games and new ones weekly, play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.